I'm telling Nick about my Critics' Choice Awards ballot buyer's remorse.
And I said, I beg you not to vote for Million Dollar Arm.
Who did you put for actress in a comedy? I really got stuck in that one.
I did Julianne Moore in Maps for the Stars, but given that it's probably not eligible for anything other than the Golden Globes, that was probably a wasted vote.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I had no idea it was eligible for anything at all until all of a sudden it got that Globe nomination, and I was so mad because I haven't had any chance to see it.
Well, it's not even on the Oscar eligibility list, so who knows
how. Did that come out?
Yeah, it did yesterday. So, you know, some sad things we were expecting, like The Babadook is not eligible since it had a TV thing first.
Well, at least that allows us to say it would have won several awards if it had only been
eligible. Oh, obviously. That doesn't apply to Critics' Choice, though, right? Like, they're just about what played in theaters?
You know, who knows? Who knows? Yeah. I just got an email from this morning, not to knock the organization the two of us belong to, but... And they were announcing these special awards they were giving this year, and I'm like, I was not consulted on any of these. Shouldn't the membership be consulted on special awards? Jessica Chastain has already won, like, 2 or 3 Critics' Choice Awards, and they're giving her a special award this year.
And she might be nominated for a Most Violent Year, for all we know.
Right. But, I mean, given that she's only been in the industry for a few years and already has 3 of their statues... It seems a little early to be like, here's a special award.
Is it for, like, total niceness?
No, the award is, they're doing kind of like a, they're adding kind of like a body of work award, I guess.
Okay.
But even that, like, shouldn't we vote on it?
Yeah, who picks these?
We're not here to talk about Critics' Choice Awards. Where is Joe? Pause, please. This would be like one of these, this would be like one of these prologues before the credits for a, for if the podcast were a movie.
Yeah, it was a stinger.
Yeah.
We're world building.
I'm emailing the DSCA lady right now. Nathaniel, you like saved my life yesterday. I can't believe that I had no idea that ballot was due yesterday.
It turns out it's really hard to do ballots when you only get 3 choices.
And when you're like stuck with one of them as best action female star, like... God, your options are limited.
That one was easy.
You're in for the 100-foot journey.
That one was easy.
But I had, like, I think I did Scarlett Johansson twice.
And with good reason.
Yeah. And then Jennifer Lawrence.
Well, I think the category exists solely to make sure Jennifer Lawrence is there each year.
Yes, absolutely.
Or Evangeline Lilly.
Okay, prologue is over. Now it's opening credits flashing on the screen. Katie Rich.
Hello, I'm here.
Nick Davis.
Me too.
Nathaniel, that's me. So we're here to talk about this crazy week of awardage before the final push, and the final push being the movie's actually coming out in theaters. Any first, like, wow, I didn't expect this about something that's been happening?
Pride!
Yeah, that was definitely, like, an exciting, unexpected moment.
Did you guys want to say something that excited you?
Oh, Jennifer Aniston's gonna get nominated for an Oscar. That's weird.
It seems so overdoing it to me, and I liked her in that movie, but it seems so overdoing it to me. But what are you gonna do?
But don't you think it's gonna happen?
Well, sure, unless Marion Cotillard, unless...
When it's always at the moment of Oscar nominating that she thrives.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's interesting that if she does get nominated, it will be one of those true, like, triumph of craft over campaigning, since there hasn't really been a campaign to speak of.
I think we call that the performance and not the politics.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Monique.
Monique, actually.
You guys have melded as one hive mind.
Nathaniel, did you have a big takeaway?
My big takeaway is Grand Budapest.
Mm.
I did not expect it to do as well as it's been doing. I would be extremely confident had the Los Angeles Film Critics actually given it a prize as opposed to all those runner-ups. But I think it's in a much better position than I was expecting it to be to get a Best Picture nomination. Only because, I mean, I think I was wrong about the movie. I saw it a second time, and it was... It's just so atypical. You know, it's very wacky. Even though it has serious themes, it's, like, very sort of madcap.
Atypical for Awards?
For awards.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, I love when atypical things happen. I'm just saying that's why it's still surprising to me. But it's been doing really well. I mean, I think the SAG nomination is a big indicator that people really respect it.
Do you think there's a sense that people screwed up by, you know, not giving Moonrise Kingdom a Best Picture nomination, which we all thought it was really close to, and therefore this is like, all right, Wes Anderson, now it's finally your turn?
I think the It's Your Turn thing always deals with the whole person's career, so yeah.
So do you want to let leader professionals take over?
Yeah, that's here? What I'm doing. Okay, so Julian asks, do we think there's any validity to the Robert Duvall situation, or is this a Nicole Kidman and the Paperboy thing? And I just want to say about that question, I'm really horrified to see them paired in a question, Julian, because Nicole Kidman was genius in the Paperboy.
I think that might have been part of his strategy in asking the question that way.
To make sure you would ask it?
That's right.
On the air. Because you couldn't let that just lie.
I couldn't, no.
Is it Julian Coiffer, who we love?
No, it's another Julian.
Okay, I'm sure we love him too. Or her. Ew, I don't want to have to see that.
I know.
Yeah.
It is on my screener stack, and it keeps getting moved up whenever any, you know, awardage happens for it. And I was like, oh, I just don't want to.
Imagine lacking screeners. I would have to pay to see it if I see it. So I would just like to say my life is harder than yours.
I think the real problem, and why I really believe it's going to happen at this point, is that for all of the openness of this year, people have not really been campaigning other than a few films. And particularly in supporting actor, it just seems like maybe because everybody assumes, well, J.K. Simmons has won already, but there's been very little campaigning for that category. And so when that happens, like, of course it's going to go to people who people just in general respect.
I think Tom Wilkinson may have a beat on this.
Yeah.
With no campaigning or interviews or anything.
Don't you think Selma is still kind of waiting to, like, really kick it out in the last couple weeks? I still feel like Selma has a huge amount of strength, and that Tom Wilkinson could get, like, floated in, you know, the way that supporting actresses do for playing the supportive wife or something. Like, it's a good part, and I don't know. I don't see any reason why he couldn't jump in there.
I mean, it does feel like Selma is one of those coattail, like Katie's saying. I trust in the coattailing power of that, especially for the, like, and, I mean, he's playing a real person.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's true.
Whatever. And it does seem exactly the kind of movie that SAG goes for. Like, the SAG nomination I could have written off. The Golden Globe thing scares me a little bit more, but.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a related question. I'm sorry. Wow.
I think this question's obviously about Hilary Swank.
A related question. Carmen Ejogo for supporting actress. Could she get swept up? This is a question for Mike. Could she be swept up in the Love for Selma? Or is that obviously just Jessica Chastain's spot?
A Most Violent Year is a really weird movie to be a lock because it's so not that grabby. I mean, her part is grabby, so that might help. And, you know, people obviously like her. But Carmen Ejogo also didn't make that big of an impact on me in Selma. So I don't know if the sweeping up would happen in the same way as it might for Wilkinson, who's a much showier part.
But she's a supportive wife, so I don't understand
if
she didn't make an impact on you.
It's true. Supportive wives always have so much to do.
Can we get into spoilers because it's a true story? But she's also an unfaithful wife, so she's not one of the reasons people get swept up in that supportive long-suffering wife thing is people's, like, ideals about what they want from characters mm-hmm. as opposed to what they want in terms of acting. But I think maybe you lose that boost if your character is not the traditional supportive character.
Well, isn't mm-hmm. Felicity Jones just blazing that trail for us right before our eyes?
Yeah, maybe. But the movie, but the movie punishes her for it, which it does not remotely punish Carmen for.
Well, excellent. I mean, I do think it's help. You know, I do think it. If you're trying to get a coattail nomination, which is not to say that that's not deserved, and I haven't even seen this movie, but it helps for the voters to already know you really well,
yes.
a la Tom Wilkinson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that they don't know Carmen Ejogo better because she's consistently really good.
She really is. I thought she was definitely the best part of that Sparkle movie.
Yeah, she was great in that.
Yeah, and she's. I think she's very good in Selma, but she doesn't. It's a small part.
Do you guys feel like there's a hope for Renee Russo at all, given that Jake Gyllenhaal keeps really making it in there?
I think he's going to fall out before she's going to get in, but I wish that she would get in. I think she's super in it.
Yeah. I finally caught up with Nightcrawler, and she really is great in it. I like him in it, too. But it would be really exciting to see her get in there for, you know, various reasons.
Nathaniel's crying right now because I referenced Jake Gyllenhaal falling out of it. let's give him his moment of silence, Katie, and we can keep talking.
I know. Powerless in the face of Steve Carell, or etc.
You guys, I was at this Jake Gyllenhaal party the other night. This is not a humble brag, but I was at this party the other night.
Wait, no, it's a name drop.
So, I know, but now I'm all, like, self-conscious about it, because Nick, your gargantua of humble brags the other day.
But,
your comment. I mean... It's true. Yeah. So anyway, I'm at this Jake Gyllenhaal event, and I thought I was about to leave because I was like, he's not going to show, because it was like 2 hours into it and he still wasn't there. And then
is that the Nightcrawler holiday party thing?
Yes,
you did?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like right by the
Nightcrawler holiday party.
I know.
I know.
Okay.
They promised Christmas carols. I don't know if there actually were any.
So there were not before I left, but there were not. But anyway, he came in, and I was by the door, and I didn't realize he was coming in. So he was, like, right, literally right next to me, like, touching shoulders. And all of a sudden, the room, like, burst out into applause. And so I like, turn, and he's right there, and I, you know, start laughing. I was like, that happens every time you walk in a room, right? And he was like, yeah. He does this little shrug, like, yeah, basically. It was funny.
Was there a split second where you thought the applause was for you?
What
happens to Nathaniel every time he walks in a room too?
That could happen to any of us. That's not a comment on you. You know, everybody suddenly looks at you ups. Like, why not? For a split second, why not enjoy that?
I can honestly say it did not occur to me that the applause was for me. It would not occur to me. But
you need more confidence, like Lou Bloom.
I will say that Tony Gilroy was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did talk to him briefly, and he assures me, promises me, in fact, that should I ever meet Tilda Swinton, she is every bit as awesome to talk to in person as she is to exist and to be in movies and everything. He's like, she would never disappoint anyone. She's so amazing.
But was that even a question? Like,
no, he asked me if I'd met her because I was like talking about Michael Clayton.
Yeah.
So that's how that came up. And I said, I have not met her.
I interviewed her at Sundance. She was amazing. I can verify this.
See, I'm not the only one, Nick.
I know, that was okay. There's my name. It was topical.
It was topical. Okay, we're back to questions. Oh, Jordan says, forget this award season. Has Katie finally seen Finding Neverland or The Iron Lady? The world is waiting to know.
Wow.
Guys, do you have any idea how many movies from this year I haven't seen? Yeah, why would I go back and watch Finding Neverland? The Iron Lady, I'm almost leaving as a point of pride. Finding Neverland, I'm open to seeing at some point.
No, leave that maybe as before a point of pride, too.
Maybe before the musical comes to Broadway, I'll watch Finding Neverland.
Can't wait for that musical.
isn't it just the obvious choice for a musical? Weren't we all waiting for that?
Absolutely. Well, wait till the Iron Lady musical. That's
Miguel's going to reprise her role, right?
That's right.
Okay, so Eurocheese asks, SAG usually matches all of the acting nominees, but, you know, 2 to 3. So who do we think is most vulnerable from the people who are nominated besides Naomi Watts, obviously?
Well, Robert Duvall and Jake, which we both... they and Naomi Watts would probably be the top of my list for people likely to drop out.
Mm-hmm. What about Jennifer Aniston?
That I feel like is going to happen.
I mean, it does feel like the other people who, when we had that actress podcast before, that everybody else's case has gotten weaker. Like, Hilary Swank hasn't shown up in any of these.
Right.
Amy Adams, it seems like the movie's starting to stink up the room a little bit. And Emily Blunt, I mean, maybe it's just because I just saw Into the Woods and I liked her in it, but it is not a... It's not a showcase, like, obvious standout from the ensemble type part that it seems like it would need to be for them to finally nominate somebody that they've never nominated before.
Right, and it's also not really that much of a leading role.
Right.
Yeah. it does feel like that could have gone supporting. I mean, she and Meryl would be competing then, but it feels logical.
Yeah. So, and like Cotillard's double movie problem just still seems like a problem. So, yeah, it seems plausible to me.
Yeah. San Fran Cinema asked, which of the Best Picture nominations this year is most likely to gain what were they thinking status 10 years from now?
Ooh.
The Imitation Game.
I will say that I like Theory of Everything better than Imitation Game. Especially on second viewing, I thought it was much stronger than that film. But I think both of them are kind of like, do they really need the best status? And I'm kind of curious at who is putting them at number one all over the place for them to keep getting nominations. They both seem to be easy locks. Like, they just show up everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, the number one thing I don't really understand, because it's so hard to find room for them among things. Like, Birdman I get as a number one pick. Like, people feel really passionate about Birdman.
Yeah.
But neither of those two seem to get it. I mean, I like The Imitation Game for the most part more than The Theory of Everything, and I've only seen each of them once, so this might change on a second look. I feel like The Imitation Game moves better, but I think Nick's arguments about the extent to which The Imitation Game is scared of its own subjects will make it look pretty ridiculous in a short amount of time.
Yeah, especially for subjects that people are improving on rapidly.
Yeah.
Kind of like the way
looks more progressive than that.
Right. And kind of like the way Django Unchained looked even more embarrassing the next year when 12 Years a Slave was getting the same nominations for things like Best Picture.
Yeah, that was like a record fast turnaround for what were they thinking.
Yes.
I do think that, well, I will say, there's not a movie in this field that I hate, and I know that sounds surprising because of how negative I've been on The Imitation Game, but I agree, it does move, it has momentum. If you're not thinking about all the things it's trying to sidestep or kind of fill the gaps with,
yes,
I understand that it plays, but there's nothing that there's not a Finding Neverland or
Reader,
but I've really despised. Yeah, you hated The Reader. Like, is there anything that I think
if
we're
saying it. If Vincent were a contender, I would be, like, foaming at the mouth, but I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. I hate that movie.
Oh, really? See, I don't have any really strong negative feelings about any of them, so that will help me get through the season. And I know a lot of people feel loathing for Unbroken and Interstellar, but I think they're interesting in ways, even when they're failing. I mean, that's my own personal take, so, like, I would be happy to keep writing about any. It's so weird, but I now view Oscars through that prism, which is maybe not healthy, but every year I'm like, oh, but that one won't be fun to write about.
How many think pieces are there about The Theory of Everything?
Right. I don't really have much to say about it.
So. I have even less to say about Into the Woods. That might be my other contender for... I thought it was fine to sit there. I had a good time, but it seemed like such a foursquare, like, here's, you know, sit down in your seat, enjoy your fish, welcome to the dinner theater, here's Into the Woods. Like, like, there was no, like, kind of take on it, or...
I love the enjoy, eat your fish, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, was that a Meryl reference?
Yeah. Hadn't even thought of it. I'm just
it
so...
Was sub, it was subconscious. That's yeah, right. It was subconscious.
Eat your fish, witch, I guess. But as a Best Picture contender, if it is that, I mean, it seems like it might well be. That seems a little surprising, too, although just the sheer scale of the undertaking, I guess, is, you know, worth rewarding or something. But
Chris James says, do we think any actor who wasn't nominated by anyone, like a Marcia Gay Harden or a Jackie Weaver surprise nomination, could still happen?
Well, I did notice from the eligibility list that Marcia Gay Harden is a contender for that Elsa and Fred, so that's possible.
I guess Carmen Ejogo would be the obvious one there, who we already discussed.
Has Laura Dern gotten a nomination? I'm not thinking of.
Oh, that's true. She hasn't.
I'm really kind of stunned by the extent to which she hasn't been involved yet, because I feel like she's so good in Wild, and everyone's seeing it because Reese is, you know, getting nominated. So yeah, I really am still hoping Laura Dern can get in there.
And that actress roundtable only confirmed that at least three quarters of Hollywood is in love with Laura Dern and has like personally been to feel better at some point by her. Nathaniel, isn't this your opening to talk about Carrie Coon?
I mean, to me that's like a long shot, but yeah, that is, I guess, a Gone Girl situation. I have such trouble reading Gone Girl in terms of awards, and I'm a little mystified that it doesn't feel like Lockish, because if you think about it, they're usually complaining that there aren't adult movies that are hits. You know, you hear that complaint about the Oscars so often that they're... We don't hear it as much since they expanded the nominee roster, but we used to hear all the time that, oh, you know, there's nothing that people have seen. And, you know, that complaint. And Gone Girl was reasonably well-received. It was a huge hit. Yeah. It played forever. People like talking about it. I'm just a little mystified that it seems to be sort of on the outskirts.
Yeah, I don't know that that means it's not going to get in there, though. You know, it's like the... You know, there's so much to chew over right now. There's so many movies that are just barely making their way out there and driving us crazy by being hard to see, and Gone Girl has kind of been there. But I feel like, should it get nominated, like, then the conversation gets to start back up again, and that's a fun one to talk about.
Yeah, you know, it is.
Talking about what I want to write about for months. I mean, Rosamund Pike keeps showing up. Like, I was kind of wondering if she was going to fade out, but it doesn't seem like she has.
I guess my other possible answer to this is not an actor, but I do think Clint Eastwood has a pretty solid shot at the director field. And I wouldn't be surprised if American Sniper in general pulled a Iwo Jima.
Oh, that is so my Robert Duvall of the year.
I'm kind of excited about that movie.
I just don't want to deal with it. Like, it might be good, but I just don't want to deal with it. Just from exhaustion with the whole, you know.
I hear you.
The whole oeuvre. Okay, so a couple of people asked about Julianne Moore. So Philip, you know, he wants to know everyone's feelings on the likelihood of her winning, and that are people upset that it's for a middling film, as many are saying. And then someone else later on, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting your name, asked, isn't it so weird that she slipped into the frontrunner spot so easily? Oh, this was Lucky. He says, how did she get the frontrunner seat so easily for a movie that has no shot elsewhere?
Hmm.
And she's been passed over recently for movies that were in the conversation.
Well, it sounds like this person hasn't read his Crazy Heart playbook about how to achieve things.
That's a perfect answer.
I have heard there are more ardent Still Alice fans than there are, for example, Crazy Heart fans, I thought. I don't remember that being anybody's favorite movie.
Yes.
The year it was up.
But some people are very moved by Still Alice. It's not all...
Really, I'm incredibly a fan of Still Alice.
There does seem to be new wave of, not a backlash, but a wave of critics who think it's completely a mediocre film, though. I am not among those. I think it's a really good film. It's a very modest film, don't get me wrong, but I think it completely works, and her performance is the movie. It's like an old-fashioned star vehicle in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it... If this year were full of kind of formidable competitors, we wouldn't necessarily be talking about what an increasingly clear path she seems to have. Mm-hmm. And I haven't kept up with how Wilde did at the box office these last couple weekends, but Still Alice doesn't seem prone to that kind of setback because it was never going to be huge.
Yeah.
Right. And also, like, Reese, I used to think that Reese would have been the front runner if she hadn't already won, but Wilde, people seem sort of mild about it, so to speak. Which surprised me, because I found it so moving. I was just as moved by that as I was Still Alice, so...
Yeah, I'm being driven slowly crazy by Wilde's, like, modestness in this. And then the Hollywood Reporter had an article that I feel like sums up what I've been thinking about, like, girl movies in Best Picture and how Wilde might get hurt by it. But, you know, Reese does have her Oscar. And think about, I mean, we're talking about a weak year for actresses. Like, think about what led to Reese winning for that movie. Like, it couldn't be so much worse.
Yeah.
Like, not anything against Reese. I'm glad she has her Oscar, but... I mean, Still Alice, she's really great. Julianne Moore is really great. Like, those two being in competition and Julianne Moore walking away, that seems perfectly just to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I really think it's about there not being, like, a strong... I mean, I'm not one of these people who thinks it was a weak year for actresses, but it was a weak year in the sense of traditional, this could win the statue right. Yes. years. And so that's, I think, why Julianne has had a fairly easy ride. But also, when you are that respected for that long,
exactly,
it's easy to get the frontrunner spot if the year is perceived as weak.
Or even, yeah. like, you know, the Kate Winslet year seemed slightly less quote-unquote weak than this. I mean, I know we're all skeptical of that, but if we just use that as a term.
Right.
And when there is that much goodwill that has accumulated toward you, and she's had even, well, I guess the same amount of time, they actually kind of got famous at the same moment, even right. though they're the same age. But, yeah, I think that people are really ready to do it. I'm kind of curious if she might win twice, a la Revolutionary Road.
At the Globes, yeah.
At the Globes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not that the Academy or anybody else is thinking this way, but if you're a Julianne fan, there is a way in which Still Alice kind of manages to pull together the sort of technical facility aspect of her career with the, like, I'm trying to play every woman more recent aspect of her career mm-hmm. into one performance. It's like way down the list of my favorite Julianne Moore performances, but there are dimensions of it that make it a kind of satisfying recognition of her.
Right, and it would not be remotely an embarrassing win, because she is very good in the film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Stewart in that movie might be a possible answer to the, like, could anybody show up?
I think that would be more likely. I see where you're coming from. I think that would be more likely if this was, like, maybe the second year of Kristen proving herself.
Yeah.
Mm.
Let's say Clouds of Sils Maria and a couple other things that happened last year and gotten more attention. Mm. I think it could definitely be, like, the surprise. But
yeah.
I think she's set herself up very well for when she gets an impressive part in a mainstream movie.
Yeah. I see what you're saying about her own momentum. I think Still Alice is the kind of movie that could really move people incredibly when they pop in their screener, expecting just to see Julianne Moore be good. And then so many people are emotionally overwhelmed by that film that it seems like the kind of movie that makes you want to Maggie Gyllenhaal it. Or,
right, you know, and the yeah. yeah, and the big gut punch impact toward the end of the film is very Kristen Stewart related.
It is.
As well. Yeah.
For sure.
And
you have a lot of voters in the Academy who might go, why can't my daughter ask me questions? Like that.
Why can't my daughter read Tony Kushner to me?
Right, exactly.
Let's see. Jamie asks, maybe this is a mean question for us to talk about because I'm sensing what our answer will be, but Jamie says, do we find it odd that the boy in Boyhood is not getting any awards traction since he aged along with the rest of them, Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette?
That is a slightly stingy read on why Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette are getting...
Because they age?
Yeah.
Well, I do think, I will say this, I mean, like, Patricia and Ethan are both really good in the movie, I think, but... I will say this, the fact that you see them age is, no matter how good you think they are in the movie, part a huge part of the appeal.
Yeah,
because like Patricia Arquette, especially for an actress, because, you know, there's always that thing, you can't let them show you age, and it's such a vanity-free performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, from start to finish, like, she doesn't seem at all concerned about how she looks as an actor. You know, sometimes she's beautiful in the movie, sometimes she's not, but it doesn't seem to be even remotely something that ever flashes in her brain.
Her whole life seems like a remarkably vanity-free exercise. She's so impressive.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. But,
I mean, I guess I'm in the camp that I feel like Ethan Hawke has by far the hardest thing to do in that movie, in performance-wise, in terms of being a parent that you're kind of rooting for and that you feel like he's giving this kid so much that the kid needs. But you also see why he's kind of a child, and you're kind of protective of the kid away from this.
Yeah,
that little
and you
bit.
Also are maybe glad that Patricia Arquette left him.
Yeah, but also kind of a little bit rooting for them to get back together or something. Like, he just has so much to kind of balance, and I think his conversation with his own star persona is pretty complicated in that movie. And so I think compared to him, I think that the kid in Boyhood, I mean, nothing against him, but but he can tilt a little more toward just kind of being on the screen, and the nature of the project will make him fascinating to us.
Right. It's more of like a vessel performance than a performance.
Right.
Like it's the auteur rather than the actor, so to speak.
Yeah.
Brian Z, who's a frequent reader, and
we love Brian Z,
and wrote an amazing piece on Under the Skin, which I highly recommend people check out, back from the Best Shot series. He asks, you know, he says obviously Wes will never win for making his type of movie, but
oh, interesting.
But that said, will he get a nomination for direction as sort of like the Academy throwing him a bone?
I just thought of like the theory of everything directed by Wes Anderson, or what directs to win under this thesis.
I don't know if I agree that he will never win for making his kind of movie, if only because I don't think he's ever going to make anything but his kind of movie. If Grand Budapest Hotel is out there making money, like, why would he stop? They like it enough to not, if they are warming to him to the extent that they are, and, you know, giving him increasing numbers of nominations, I don't know. I can see him winning when he's 60 or something.
It reminds me of the Black Swan situation. Like, I can't see maybe categorically why Black Swan got Darren Aronofsky nominated more than other things he might make. But sometimes it's just the right time and people are excited about the right movie.
Yeah. And
maybe it's a performance or it's something else or it's box office that makes it seem more eligible. But that seems like that could happen for Wes Anderson. It seems like it's even what's happening right now, maybe.
That's true. That's a good point.
Like, he won't win for Grand Budapest Hotel this year, but I think a director nomination, like, looking at the other options, seems really possible.
I would be very happy for him, just because I think auteurs, for inexplicable reasons, have, you know, sometimes a hard time getting in there.
And I think it requires what you said about Interstellar, one of our last podcasts, Nathaniel, where you go from kind of banging your head against a filmmaker's limitations or their completely stubborn reflexes to suddenly finding them endearing.
Yeah.
Really just want to do this.
Yeah, oh, you're really committed to this. It's actually, Nick, it's like what you said about Sofia Coppola back in the day. You're like, okay, you want to make another movie about Pink and Dreamy Girls? Yes, yeah. Go for it.
Make Pink on a misty morning. Just do it. I got it. Now I'm totally into it.
Yeah.
So maybe the Academy works the same way.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a good question from Lady Edith. Says, I don't look to the Oscars to tell me which films are the best. My test is, do I want to see it a second time? This year, I have seen Gone Girl, Grand Budapest, Begin Again, Edge of Tomorrow, and Babadook more than once. Which films do you most want to watch again? I would say Lady Edith has very good taste, because all of those movies are worth rewatching, and I've seen all of them more than once.
Wow. Where do you find the time to rewatch all these movies? I'm jealous. Sorry, Nick, I interrupted you.
No, I just... What was the list again? Because I think it overlapped with my rewatches a lot, too.
Oh, Gone Girl, Grand Budapest, Begin Again, Edge of Tomorrow, and Babadook.
Okay. I really wanted to see Beyond the Lights again, and I didn't succeed in doing that before it left. I think The Homesman is a total watcher-againer, because it doesn't end where you think it's going to. And movie, again, from that perspective, is rewarding.
Do you value that as, in terms of, do you think it's what makes films, like, best? Because I have split feelings about that.
Yeah, not necessarily, because, like, there are movies like Interstellar and Gone Girl that I was kind of only... I was kind of cool on, but the things that were interesting about them made me want to see them again, which I did, to try to... You know, I kind of doubted my own opinion, or I was just kind of, whatever. Mm-hmm. There are reasons to re-see that sometimes
enthusiasm. I was really affected a couple years ago when I saw The Master a second time and kind of realized, I think it left up to my favorite movie of that year, and the first time I saw it, I was kind of baffled and not that into it. And so I'm really hoping to be able to do the same for Inherent Vice, which I was kind of baffled and not that into, but I don't know how I might feel about it on a second viewing. It's something where... When something like that happens, you kind of start questioning your first take on a lot of things. So I almost feel like I need to rewatch everything before I make a top 10, which is obviously not going to happen.
That's what I usually...
Also, Grand Budapest.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Grand Budapest is high on my list, too, because I did rewatch Moonrise Kingdom kind of hoping to catch what everyone else had the first time, and I never did. But I wonder, having liked Grand Budapest, I really wonder how I feel about it the second time.
I like the illness metaphor there. I wanted to catch what everybody else had about Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah.
I like the kind of generosity in this question, though, that it does get you away from thinking that we are all right in our opinions and that the movie that we liked the best is also the best movie and should win. Like, the idea that it's something that even if you weren't personally in love with it, it compelled your attention in that way, that's a nice way to think about what should win.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, too. It's also a good rule, I think, for film critics, the rewatchability factor. Because, yeah. Now, obviously, some genres are just more rewatchable because they don't, you know, if they're on TV, you can sort of casually, like comedies, for example, casually watch. But I do think it's important to think about that at least before you, compose your ballot, because the ballots tend to be so self-serious across awards groups. And there are a lot of films that have aged well that are comic and light.
Yep.
So, Begin Again is a great example this year. Like, people liked it, but nobody really, like, respected it. It is so enjoyable on multiple views. So I think 10 years from now, people will still like that movie.
It will probably also profit from underdog status, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's a fun movie to root for.
Yeah. And I think Pride is similar, but more, in that case, more that people just didn't see it at all this year. At least Begin Again had a good run, you know?
Yeah.
Here's a fun question. John says, what should I do Oscar morning after learning that Marion Cotillard has not been nominated, but Christoph Waltz has?
Oh, wow.
Pessimism.
Dystopia.
Oh, man. I feel like Christoph Waltz isn't going to happen, but that's maybe overly optimistic.
Is he still campaigning supporting?
Apparently.
Because that's a bleak outcome for that judge spot that we were talking about.
Yeah, I'd rather have Duvall in there just because he hasn't gotten attention otherwise.
Gosh, we're so stymied by this question. It's such a terrible thing to think about.
I was looking on Ava DuVernay's nomination or something. Go watch him.
Yes. Yes. That's a good answer.
That's what I'm going to say from now on in my life when something's going badly. Just close your eyes and think of Ava DuVernay.
Think of Ava DuVernay and Bradford Young.
Wait, you don't already do that, Nick?
It's becoming more common.
A two-part last question. Not from the readers, but SAG. What did you think of the ensemble nominations? Because we haven't mentioned it. And Globe, their best picture fields. Which movie that didn't make it are you like, oh, because you thought it might be there? And
well, the SAG ensemble stump for Selma, I took hard. I wasn't a fan of that.
I never get that excited about the SAG Ensemble Award, which I know we're supposed to think of as its main award, but it always seems so kind of controlled by just general buzz.
Yeah.
I tend to ignore it a little bit. So I didn't have much of a reaction to it. I do think the Theory of Everything nomination is a little bit silly. I guess for your other question, maybe it would be Begin Again or Obvious Child or one of the other comedies or musicals or versions thereof that I thought were really good this year that I hoped might have a spot, but you know, whatever. I was pretty much okay with those Globe nominations.
Yeah, I was too, especially because Pride was in there. I felt like it would be churlish to complain about the musical comedy picture field since Pride made it, you know?
Yeah.
Just think Annie could have been in there.
It could have.
I'm a little bit surprised the Lego movie wasn't. That seemed like a Globe-type move to make. But.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
But I thought they weren't allowed to do that anymore.
Oh, really?
They can't nominate they can't nominate animated films?
Because they got, since they gave them their own category.
Oh. Really?
I don't think they're allowed to anymore.
Jeez. Okay.
I'm not sure.
So yeah.
A million people just corrected me in the comments if I'm wrong. Okay, well, that was fun. Katie has to run. She's off to hobnob with the stars. That you're going to a Selma event, right?
Oh, yeah. We're going to go visit the baby that my friends just had. Whichever. But that baby's an Oscar voter, so I'm going to get a lot of information.
I thought you were going to Selma things today.
Oh, no. That's tomorrow. Mm. I'm doing no hobnobbing today. Just going to build gingerbread houses with a baby.
That's even better.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really good.
I'm going to a Blue Ruin tree decorating party.
Oh, now I suddenly...
You have the best Oscar season Christmas events.
I do. And then later I have winter sleep stocking stuffing. It's awesome out here in Chicago.
Okay, thank you, everyone. We'll talk to you soon. The next podcast, we're recording them a little out of order, will be on Wild and Foxcatcher. But we wanted to get this out there while you were still discussing the SAG and Globe nominations. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Nick.
Bye.
Thanks, Katie.
Bye, guys.
And
I'm really glad you talked about Foxcatcher without me. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. It's your own fault for being so fabulously busy.
I know.
Humble brag.
That's a great line reading.
Oh my god, you guys, I didn't even tell you my Julianne Moore story.
But Katie's gotta go.
She doesn't
have to kick her out of this.
How quick is it?
It's quick. So, like, because I only had, like, 2 seconds with her at her lunch. But, so, like, I walk up to her and I was just like, Julianne, I have to tell you. I have this category in my awards, like best line reading, and you're hogging it right now, because I said the Still Alice, like you're sort of nonchalant, like you.
I have Alzheimer's.
Use Alzheimer's to blame everything, and she totally did the line, like with her shoulder shrug. It was super funny, and then she started laughing, and then I was like, and then your line, and then your the meanest line from Maps to the Stars, and she was like, oh no, like she was scared to see what I was gonna say. And I said, like, the line about Elle Hathaway, and she covers her eyes. She's like, I begged them not to make me say that.
Oh.
She's like, it was so mean. And I was
like... What's the line?
Like, she hears in the movie that Hathaway has been cast to play her mother in, like, a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, Hathaway, how's that gonna work? Like, with total disdain? Like, a Hatha-hating? It was so mean.
So does she also get a spot in perpetuity for I've Seen You Rap Things, I hope. Like, just give that one of the nominations. I know it was 20 years ago, but...
Anyway, she was super cute about it. Adorable.
Aww. Good.
So she doesn't hate okay. Anne Hathaway. Everybody needs to know that. Okay,
yeah.
Bye.
All right.
Good. Sorry, guys. Gotta go. Bye.
Bye.